We welcome you in to the Gardener's Corner program, a Friday feature here on WKRX 96.7 FM. Rob Hall with you. Our guest today on the program is Johnny Coley. Johnny is actually been speaking at a conference this morning, and he had contacted me and told me that he was going to be a little bit late making his way on air. So we're going to fill a little bit of time this morning with some good information. We want to start out by letting you know that you can contact your local Cooperative Extension Service office anytime you have any questions or anything. They are very knowledgeable people, and they don't mind sharing the information with you. But I want to let you know, coming up on Tuesday, May 3rd, this is going to start at 6:30 p.m. It's an equine workshop. What does your horse really need to eat? Now, this workshop is going to be taking place at 4200 Kennedy Mill Road in Oxford. They'll be talking about understanding hay analysis, meaning a lot of hay producers send off samples of hay to have them analyzed for us to find out how much nutrition is in the hay. And if you are a hay producer, this is something that you could maybe do if you're wanting to market your hay to people. This would be more or less more information to your customers. And also, if you're purchasing hay from someone, they may or may not have the analysis. But they'll be talking about that, as well as feeding various classes of horses, meaning some horses are just pasture roamers, some or maybe work horses that are ridden and worked several days a week. And also, they will be talking about how you can use supplements for better health in your horse. Just call your local Cooperative Extension Service office. Even though the meeting and workshop is going to be in Oxford at 4200 Kennedy Mill Road, you can call and go ahead and get signed up. 336-599-1195 is the Person County office number. 919-603-1350 is the Granville County office. I think we've got Johnny on hold, and so let's welcome him in. Good morning, Johnny. How are you today?
Doing well, Rob. Good morning. Good morning. Well, everyone's doing good today.
Well, Johnny, I know you're wearing a lot of different hats today. You've been speaking, making a presentation, and you have another one later on today, but I'm glad you was able to fit us in your hectic schedule. So how you doing?
Doing good. A little cool out here this morning, but I guess it's still April, isn't it? Let's look at the calendar, and still April. I think we were 43 this morning when I got up, so still a little cool for tomatoes.
Yeah. We had a low of 41, and we're checking in at 54, and I know a lot of people have been, you know, wanting to get out and start planting the garden, and you know, little things kind of stick out in your mind and your thoughts and things like that, and I always think about, you know, the saying that you said your dad would always say, plant tomatoes in April or plant them in May, and you'll pretty much have tomatoes about the same time, because soil temperature and those cool nights, you know, it's not necessarily real favorable to, you know, vegetable garden plants, correct?
Correct, yeah. I mean, tomatoes want to grow, you know, nighttime temperature 60 to 70, daytime temperature 70 to 80, preferable. Of course, we get above that of here as the season goes on, but tomatoes like it a little bit warmer. Talking to some high school children today, coming through the research station over here in Oxford, and we were talking about, you know, certain plants do like it cooler. You know, you got your cold crops, and they like it cooler, but your summer, most all your summer crops want to be warm, and peppers and cucumbers and squash, tomatoes fall into that, eggplants, they all are going to be, you know, need to have warmer temperatures to do their best. But, you know, we got 1st of May coming here in another couple of days. So, you know, it's a good time to start planting your garden. I've talked to several people, and they already have theirs planted. You know, tobacco is beginning to go in the ground in some places. And so, you know, season's coming. We just have a couple of cool days. I think tomorrow's going to be cool as well, but it's going to warm up next week in the 80s. And yeah, definitely time to get not just your vegetable garden planted, but your summer annuals as well. Time to get those in the ground. And again, a lot of people have already done that. We had to cover them up a few nights. Especially last week, I think we were 30, in the mid-30s anyway, one day last week of a light frost.
Well,
the last 2 years, Rob, we've had frost in May.
I know. I was just looking at the 7-day forecast, and it looks like that within the next week or so, that our nighttime lows after, you know, tonight, of course, the low tonight is supposed to be somewhere around 50 on Saturday night, 53 Sunday night. Low down around 59, but from like Monday on, it's going to be, you know, somewhere around 58, 59 into the low 60s. That is nighttime temperature. So May 1st is Sunday, and so if you got those plants, if you got them somewhere where they are thriving and growing good right now, might be a good idea to leave them there a few more days before you set them out, but you are right, Johnny. A lot of the tobacco farmers are setting tobacco out, which they have no other choice with the amount of acreage that so many of them, you know, produce now. They have to, you know, start planting early, and they end up harvesting, you know, late on into the fall time of the year. But, and you know, Johnny, you've talked about it numerous times about it doesn't take a very large vegetable garden, if you look after it, to produce enough for a family. And, you know, it can be a lot of work the more you plant, but if you want to have some to have fresh vegetables and maybe be able to can or freeze some, you can plant a little bit, and if you look after it like you're supposed to, and everything falls into place, it could be a bountiful harvest.
Exactly, Rob. Yep. You don't need, you know, you don't need an acre or even a half acre of garden to be very productive and get a lot of fruit off of it. You know, tomatoes and squash, cucumbers, you know, very prolific with their fruit. So, you know, you don't need to have a lot of them. And, you know, some people will plant some early and then they'll plant some more later as the season goes on to even extend it into the later part of the summertime. But, you know, we have such a long growing season here. You know, but I'd say from 1st of May to the at least middle of October, we usually go with before we have a frost, and a lot of years is even after that. So, you know, it's a pretty good long growing season, so you can do succession plantings, which would be just, you know, you plant some and then you plant some more to keep the fruit or the vegetables coming on in as time goes. But and one of the plants, Rob, that does like it a little bit cooler, doesn't mind the cool temperatures, and if I'm going to go pick them, I want it to be a little cooler, and that's strawberries. And we're right slap dab in the middle of strawberry season. A lot of strawberry growers in Granville and Person counties, and you know, you need to go ahead out and pick you some strawberries. Would not be a bad day at all today to go out to the strawberry patch and pick, you know, enough for the weekend, and even some to put up in can. A lot of the growers say that a lot of don't have as many people getting the quantity They have customers come in more often now and just get enough for a few days and then get some more for the next few days. They don't get them to can, but, you know, strawberries, especially in preserves, strawberry preserves is, it's hard to beat.
Absolutely.
Later on when it's not strawberry season anymore.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned strawberries, Johnny, because I honestly hadn't thought about strawberries this morning. And, you know, depending on the season, it could be a long strawberry season or a short season. But let's hopefully, you know, that the strawberry growers will do good. And I have been told that when you talk about having to work hard for a crop, strawberry is definitely one of the ones that is most labor intense. Do you agree with that statement?
It is, and it's, you know, it's very, as most crops are, Rob, it's very reliant on weather. You know, we think about strawberries, and strawberries and Mother's Day sort of goes hand in hand. You know, we think about strawberries in the springtime of the year, but, you know, most commercial growers are going to plant those strawberry plants in October. So, you know, it's not a few weeks or a couple of months crop. It's, you know, they're taking care of it through the winter. You know, the plants go pretty much dormant during the winter time, but as they start coming out of dormancy, we always have those cool or cold nights. We had one night not too long ago that was a very cold night that a lot of the strawberries had already started, you know, coming out of dormancy and even beginning to flower, but even before they flower with the tender foliage on it, they're very susceptible to freezes. And if they get burned back from a freeze, that just delays the crop even more. So, you know, it's not an easy crop to do, and you have so many variables, and unfortunately, weather is one of the variables that we cannot control, and that. You know, but a lot of growers will cover them up with row covers, or we'll put water. You know, still some that'll spray water on them to keep them from losing them. The water though, once you start, you have to continue putting water on it. I was at a gentleman's house, and he actually had some blueberries that he had tried to save with watering them, and he watered them to the point where they were iced, and then he quit. Well, the process of making ice is what puts the heat off and keeps those blooms from freezing. So if you get ice on it and then turn it off, then those blooms will actually be more likely to freeze. So once you start spraying or putting water on plants to protect them from freezing, you have to continue doing that until the temperatures get above freezing. So that's a very intense, you have to stay up all night with them, very intense process going, trying to save your strawberries or any fruit crop for that matter, in that manner. But it's it is not an easy crop. As I told somebody the other day, it's not a cookie cutter crop. Yeah. That you can just do the same thing to every year and expect the same results. Every year brings its own challenges. As with most crops, you know, most crops are going to have those challenges, whether it's a strawberry or blueberry or tomato or squash. You know, you always have different things each year to have to deal with.
Well, Johnny, you know, I was thinking about, you know, wonder how they came up with the idea by frost freezing weather about, you know, irrigating and keeping water running over the crops to freeze water on them, that it would protect the crops. And then, you know, like you say, you got to keep the water running, but that is a very interesting concept on how it works. But, you know, I guess just experimental is what kind of brought that information around.
Yeah. I mean, research. You know, research is always being done on all the crops. You know, and you know certain you know, at the university level. You know, there's always researchers there trying to figure a better way to raise the crops. And you know, ultimately, what they're trying to do is make the crops more profitable for the growers. You know, that's what they're trying to do in the research phase. You know, having better, more resistant varieties of any plants. You know, tomatoes have come a long way with the resistance of diseases that they have. So there's always research being done. You know, how somebody, I guess, you know, you have to know the chemistry of making ice, which I'm not going to pretend to know. But you know, did somebody realize that you know, this making ice actually, you know, produces heat. So could we use that to protect our blooms? And it does it only to a certain temperature. So it's not like if it got 15 degrees, this would work, because it you know it only raises it a few degrees. So you have to can't use it in every situation. And hopefully, when the flowers are blooming, we would not get the extreme temperatures. And we're using the example of strawberries. You know, hopefully it wouldn't get that cold where we would have to protect them. But, you know, and again, a lot of people will do the row covers where they just cover the berries up, and the heat of the ground actually insulates them. So it just depends on how cold it's going to get of what measures you need to take.
Well, Johnny, now, I know you're not fond of tomatoes, but you know, a lot of people love those homegrown tomatoes, and I'm one of those people. But as far as when choosing a variety of tomato to plant, I can't remember which is which, but is it the indeterminate and the determinate variety of tomato?
That's right, Rob. You do. You have the determinate tomato, and you were talking about canning, and you know, one of the vegetables or fruit. Tomatoes actually a fruit that people can or put in, you know, pasta, not pasta, but pestos or salsas. Sauces is what I was looking for, but they'll want all their tomatoes to come in at one time, so they can, you know, they can make or they can can or whatever they want to do. And the determinate varieties will do that. So the determinate varieties, they bloom and produce fruit on the terminal growth. So they normally will ripen fairly consistent time frame, but then they're done for the season. So a determinate tomato doesn't usually get as large as an indeterminate tomato, but it doesn't produce fruit throughout the season like an indeterminate tomato, which produces fruit on its lateral branching. It's going to keep producing fruit as the most, you know, the fruit's going to start at the bottom, and as the plant grows, there's, you know, more tomatoes are developed, and it just continues to go, you know, through the season. Now, here, we do battle diseases throughout the season, so, you know, the plants may not last as long as they would in certain areas that they don't have the diseases that might get on them. But the indeterminate tomatoes are going to continue to grow. If they get larger, they're going to require staking or trellising of some sort. And then the determinate are more compact, if you will. You do have some that they consider semi-determinate. I think Celebrity is a variety they consider semi-determinate. You know, it is from what I understand, it's more of just a short or smaller growing indeterminate fruit or plant, but it just doesn't get quite as large as some of the indeterminate varieties do. But yeah, you have the mainly, and it will be designated on your tag when you buy your tomato as a D or an I. So if it has an I, you know that variety is indeterminate.
That's very interesting. I had never heard that. Well, Johnny, One thing I want to ask you about gardening. Now, when someone is planting a garden for the first time, it's some publications through the Extension Service that they could read up on to help them know the way to do and the best way to do. But one of the most important things is doing a soil sample to know what kind of nutrients that's in the soil and what kind of nutrients needed to be added to help produce the garden. And, you know, I remember when COVID-19 pandemic started, it was a lot of people that wanted to, you know, start planting gardens. And I just think it was a lot of people that, you know, planted gardens and things that had never done it before. But with the price increase of everything, I think it's going to be a lot more people trying to plant vegetables, you know, things like that. So the soil samples have always been extremely important of having them tested. But with the prices of everything, I would say the importance of getting the soil samples is something that's more valuable than it's ever been before.
You're absolutely right, Rob, because you don't want to, at the price fertilizer is this year, you don't want to fertilize if you don't have to. So if that soil test tells you, you know, you don't need certain fertilizer or certain nutrients in your garden, then, you know, you definitely don't want to do that. And you know, the 1st of April, the soil samples became free. They'll be free till the end of November. So, you know, go ahead and do the soil sample. Another thing that, other than just nutrient value, is pH. That's another big component that more information that you get from the soil sample results. And that pH means a lot, because if your pH is not correct, then even if the nutrients are there, the plant may not be able to take them up as efficiently as if that pH was right. So, you know, getting your pH right and getting your pH, knowing what it is, it definitely helps. Now, you know, you have to realize that you get your soil test back and your pH is a 5.5, and most vegetable gardens are going to want to be around a 6.2, 6.5 range. It's going to take a little while for that pH to rise up. You know, you're not going to put lime out today and pH will be okay, you know, 2 weeks from now. Usually takes about 6 to 9 months for the lime to take effect and actually, you know, get in the soil. So, you know, if you're going to plant a vegetable garden, you know, it wouldn't hurt to do a sample in the fall, maybe right after you've harvested, to find out what that pH is. And you can lime if you need to. You know, you do not always have to lime. Sometimes the pH is okay. But go ahead and lime it in the fall, and that way you'll be more likely to have that pH adjusted for your spring crop. And then you could do another soil sample in the spring if you'd like to and see what the pH is again and see what the nutrient values you need to put down. Incorporating some of those nutrients, like phosphorus and potassium, incorporating them into the soil is going to make that nutrient more available to the plants faster. It's going to be able to be used quicker. Nitrogen, not so much. Nitrogen goes through the soil pretty quickly and can be used, you know, pretty quickly by the plant. But soil tests are very, very critical part. And this year, I would say even more so, because they're free service, you know, to get it done. And you know, if you don't need to put all the nutrients you've been putting in the past now, then that's better, and not have to spend that money. Cause if you're not careful, you know, you'll be better off buying them than raising them. So
you
have to be careful and not have too much input into your vegetable garden.
Yeah. Well, Johnny, you did, you know, mention about the price of fertilizer, you know, really being expensive. Now, it is alternative ways to, you know, help get nutrients to, you know, your plants. Some people like to use chicken manure, cow manure, horse manure, or whatever. But when applying these, you need to be really careful because it is a such thing as applying too much, and it will burn your plants. Correct?
That is right. Probably not as much of a hazard with the cow and horse manure as it is with the chicken manure.
Okay.
Chicken manure is very high in ammonia. So it's going to be high. It's going to have a high nitrogen content. So you have a lot of high nitrogen with the chicken manures. Chicken manures are also going to be fairly high in weed seeds. So weed seeds could be an issue using chicken manure. It's a great, you know, great fertilizer. It's a great supplement, a great compost to put in there, but. You know, make sure it is composted and you're not putting too high of nitrogen value on your plants, because nitrogen will burn. You get, you know, you can get toxicity, nitrogen toxicity, probably quicker than any other nutrient, because it releases so quickly. That ammonia is released so quickly. So,
Well, now, Johnny, I just had someone to text me a message, and I'm going to ask if you have ever heard of this. The gentleman says that he was told the other day to place an egg beside of a tomato plant, and that's all the fertilizer that you need for that tomato plant. Have you ever heard of such?
What the eggshell does is provide calcium. It does take a little while for that eggshell to break down, so that calcium is not going to be available immediately. But what it does, and where that probably came about, was the blossom end rot, which is a physiological disorder that the plants will get, the tomatoes will get. It's where they rot on the bottom of the tomato. That's a blossom end rot. And it's a calcium deficiency. So probably where that came from was, you know, adding the eggshells does help with the calcium deficiency. But I would not say that's all the fertilizer the plants would need throughout the season.
Okay.
I mean, without doing a soil test, you really don't know that. And that's really the only nutrient that you're going to get from the, well, I won't go that far. I won't say that's the only nutrient you're going to get, but that's the main reason people use the calcium.
They use
the eggshells.
They would use the eggshells and not necessarily the whole egg.
Yeah, usually it's eggshells.
Okay.
That you use when you put, you know, because that, like I said, it has calcium in it, and that helps with the blossom end rot.
We need to take a break. I need to get a couple of messages on, one from T.G. Brooks Company and the other for E.B. Harris Auctioneering. More with Johnny Coley after these messages.
April and spring is bursting open. T.G. Brooks Company is ready, and they have them in. They've got your plants, several varieties of tomatoes, big boys, better boys, German Johnson, and others, cucumbers, pepper plants, even Tabasco. And they have, ready for you today, herbs like basil. They are geared up for the planting season. This is the month to get things going for spring and summer. Fresh garden seed are in and ready to plant. Reseed your lawn with clean, fresh grass seed. And they have the fertilizer, lime, herbicides for weed control. And if you need mulch, wow, do they have it. Even triple ground mulch. Do you need straw, pine needles? How about potting soil, planting soil, or cow manure? They have aerators. No matter if you are the homeowner or you are the commercial landscaper, T.G. Brooks handles everybody with the same courteous service. They can arrange delivery, or you can pull in with your pickup truck, trailer. They'll load it up for you. The bag products like pine mulch, they'll load up in your car or trailer. It is exciting to see spring 2022 and the exciting growing season. Make tracks to 411 Helena Mariah Road in Timberlake. Phone them at 364-2428. Don't forget the dog food and the kennels. T.G. Brooks proudly has served the homeowner, the farmer, and those in construction since way back in 1936. They welcome folks from all over Person County, Rougemont, and Northern Durham, and, of course, Southern Person County.
E.B. Harris, Auctioneering NCAL 1468, announces the farm equipment auction to be held Saturday, May 7th at 9 a.m., at 2254 Highway 58 in Warrington in the Inez community. It's the annual cow pasture sale. On-site and online bidding available. For terms, photographs, and more information, log on to ebharris.com or call EB at 252-257-2140. Up for auction on Saturday, May 7th at 9 a.m. Tractors, trucks, trailers, tillage, planting, hay equipment, and much, much more. That'll be at 2254 Highway 58 in Warrington in the Inez community, the annual cow pasture auction sale conducted by E.B. Harris Auctioneering. Call E.B. at 252-257-2140 or log on to ebharris.com for more information. We do appreciate the support of T.G. Brooks Company and E.B. Harris Auctioneering. It's the Gardener's Corner program. I want to make mention of a couple of things. The Piedmont Regional Goat and Sheep Conference will be Friday, May 6th at the NCA&T Pavilion in Greensboro. They ask that you register by May 2nd. If you register early, it's $20. Or if you register at the door, it's $25. And this includes lunch. You can call 336-599-1195 for more information on the Piedmont Regional Goat and Sheep Conference. Also, something else coming up, the North Carolina Small Ruminant Improvement Program Flock Management Workshop will be in Mount Airy on Saturday, May 14th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and is hosted by Sleepy Creek Farms, the Westmoreland family. Lunch will be included. They'll be having nutritional management, flock health, also farm tours, and much more. Again, you can call that same number, 336-599-1195, to get signed up for that. Or you can log on to go.ncsu.edu/flock-management. Anyway, Johnny, that was just a few things I wanted to make mention of. Now, Johnny, I know you got a lot of topics you want to touch on, but one you mentioned was azaleas that folks need to know about, the time to trim them back.
Yeah, Rob, the azaleas get a lot of questions on, you know, pruning azaleas. Azaleas bloom on last year's growth, so whatever grew last year, and then they'll set buds on that growth. So if you prune them back in February, you're pruning your blooms off for this year. So, you know, a lot of people ask, well, when do you prune them? And it's right after they finish blooming. So right after your azaleas finish blooming, which some of the varieties are beginning to wrap their blooming season up, but still a lot of beautiful azaleas out there. But if you want to do some pruning to your azaleas, you want to do that right after they finish blooming in order to have blooms next year. So you'll prune it, and then it'll grow new growth from that, and then they'll set buds for next year to do that. Now, a lot of people ask, well, you know, what if I have the encore azaleas or the repeat blooming azaleas, which, you know, is very popular now. You have those varieties that bloom in the spring, and then they'll bloom again in the fall, late summer, or fall. Same time. You want to prune them right after they bloom in the spring. You don't want to prune those after they bloom in the fall. You want to prune them after they bloom in the spring. They usually, the blooms will last too long into the summer. If you prune them then you'll have new growth come out and you might lose it to a frost. You don't want to prune your azaleas after the second bloom. If you have the repeat blooming azaleas, you want to prune them after that first bloom. And then they'll still bloom, because how they do that is they bloom on new and old growth. So you'll still have blooms in the summer and the fall if you prune them right after they finish blooming. And you'll continue that cycle. So that goes as far as pruning them after they bloom. For a lot of the plants that bloom in this early spring, forsythia or yellow bell is another one that that blooms in early spring. You prune it, you know, right after they finish blooming. You can still prune it now and be okay. You still have time to put on growth after you prune it. So, you know, yellow bell, some of the spireas that bloom early. Quince is an early blooming plant. The magnolia, the saucer magnolia, or the tulip magnolia, that's another plant or tree/shrub that you would prune after they finish blooming in the spring. So, you know, anything that blooms early is pretty much blooming on last year's growth. It hasn't had time to put on any growth this year, so it's blooming on last year's growth. And after they finish blooming is when you want to prune those, so you don't miss a blooming pruning. You don't want to miss a blooming season with those, and that's how you would do that. So that's a critical thing. One thing you mentioned earlier, Rob, too, is the vegetable. If you're a beginner vegetable grower, if you're growing, you know, in a garden for the first time, the publications, we do have those. If anybody would like one, I'd be glad to send them to them, either email them or put them in, you know, regular mail to them. It's a beginner gardener's guide that NC State has put out, so it's a great publication. And there's also some, you know, specific publications as well. A couple that come to mind are tomato diseases and insects. I've got some good publications there, actually. From Clemson Extension, but they're good publications to have on hand. So when you do get a particular disease or insect on your tomato plants, you can get good pictures. You can ID it, and if it's an insect, you'll know what to spray it with. A lot of the diseases for tomatoes, you have to spray as a preventative. Once they get on the plant, it's hard to control them. But there's some great publications out there to help you with gardening, and I'll be glad to, you know, go over those with anybody that is interested or send them the publication. So just reach out, and want to make sure you have a successful garden. It's you work hard not to have a successful one.
336-599-1195 or 919-603-1350 is the numbers that you can catch up with Johnny Coley. We're going to take a break and catch up on a couple of advertisements for Denton Farm Park at South Boston Memorials. More Gardener's Corner right after these messages.
A brand new name, but the same great music festival of more than four decades at Denton Farm Park, Denton, North Carolina. The annual Malpas Brothers Country and Bluegrass Music Festival is May 5th, 6th, and 7th. This year, the lineup includes the Malpas Brothers, High Fidelity, Deeper Shade of Blue, Darren and Brooke Aldridge, the King James Boys, Russell Moore and Third Time Out, Fast Track, Larry Efaw, Drive Time, the Tennessee Bluegrass Band, the Tim Raven Band, Donna Ulysses, Caroline and Company, Sideline and Authentic Unlimited. Denton Farm Park, Denton, North Carolina. DentonFarmPark.com with full details. Or you can call 336-859-2755. Camping on site or area hotel accommodations. DentonFarmPark.com. Don't miss the annual Malpas Brothers Country and Bluegrass Music Festival, May 5th through 7th, Denton Farm Park, Denton, North Carolina.
South Boston Memorials, located 1439 Seymour Drive in South Boston, Virginia, has been in business since 1958. The Myers family of South Boston Memorials believe that every life has a story. For four generations, their life work has been to present and preserve that story for our prosperity to hear. Allow South Boston Memorials to tell yours. South Boston Memorials has granite memorials, markers, and mausoleums, over 300 in stock. In-house laser etching is available at South Boston Memorials, and they can also make pet markers. For memorial benches, vases, and monuments, call on South Boston Memorials at 434-572-3859 or visit their website, SoboMemorials.com. That's 434-572-3859. South Boston Memorials is located 1439 Seymour Drive in South Boston, Virginia. Like us on Facebook or visit the website, SoboMemorials.com. Johnny Coley is our guest today on the Gardener's Corner program. Johnny, we've got, about 7 or 8 minutes left on the program today. I know you've got lots of other things you want to pass along to the listeners, so you take off and I'll just kind of follow your lead.
Well, Rob, just I did want to mention the Extension Master Gardener training will be starting in August. I know it sounds like we're at the end of April here. If, you know, why are they mentioning that in April all the way to August? But it'll be here before we know it for sure. Just a three short months. We'll be right in the beginning of August anyway. So August 11th is when that Master Gardener training will start. It will be on Thursdays from 9 till 12, starting August 11th. It'll be every Thursday through at least November, probably first couple of Thursdays in December even, but at least through November we will have those classes every Thursday. I think Thanksgiving is in there somewhere, so we'll miss Thanksgiving, but should be pretty much all the other Thursdays throughout the fall. So anybody that is interested in taking the Extension Master Gardener training class, please contact me, and I'll get you more information about that. There is a $150 charge for the Master Gardener training. That does include a hardback Extension Master Gardener book. It's a very good resource to have. So, like I said, anybody else that is interested in that, do not have the location of that yet nailed down. We're hoping within the next week and a half, that I will have that location for that class where we're going to have that, trying to keep it in one location throughout the whole training. Also wanted to mention, this goes back again to the vegetable gardens. We're hitting that hard this week, but it's, you know, getting that season to get them planted. And one thing you want to do with your vegetable garden is scout. I tell everybody the easiest thing to do with vegetable gardens is the planting of the vegetable garden.
After that,
work begins. You know, so if you don't like planting it, then you might want to rethink whether you want a vegetable garden or not, because that's the funnest part. And I guess that's an opinion, not a fact. But it's, for me, the funnest part is and the easiest part is planting it, and then you get diseases, you get insects, you get, you know, water issues, all kinds of things. But scouting your vegetable garden daily, scouting by mean going and looking at it, observing the plants, did they look different than they did the day before, and determining if they do look different, why? You know, what's going on with it? If they get an insect on it, it's a lot easier to kill two or three insects than it is to kill 50 or 100 insects. Once you get, you know, once you get a lot of insects on there, it's a whole lot more difficult to kill them or to control them. So you want to scout your vegetable plants on a regular basis, and even your summer annuals. You know, all your whole landscape in the summertime. Just keep a you know, close eye, so you can treat it in a timely manner, so you're not trying to play catch up on certain things. Diseases are a little trickier, but you know, still, you just want to. If something's going on with the plant that looks different than it did, you know, a day or two before, you want to be able to diagnose and see what's going on and determine that. Saying that, we have a troubleshooting or a diagnostic class of ways or what to look for as the season goes on in certain plants. We have a class next Wednesday. It'll be at the Person County Library from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Also available on Zoom. You can enroll in this through Eventbrite. And again, contact me. I'll give you the information. Give you the how you can register for that. If you can't get on Eventbrite, or if you can't get registered, just give me a call and let me know that you're interested in coming, and I'll get you registered, and you can come, like I said, face to face at the Person County Library from 12 to 1, or you can visit us or join us through the platform of Zoom. So that class, again, is on Wednesday. That's May 4th, I believe. My math is right.
You are correct.
That is correct, all right. May 4th at the Person County Library from 12 to 1. And it's about, you know, what to look for, what's causing this issue with my plant, and which direction do I need to, what control measures I might need to take to get those plants back in health. And planting healthy plants is the key thing too. You plant a plant that's not in the best in condition when you first plant it, you're battling an uphill battle all summer trying to control issues that plant may get. So start out planting healthy plants, and at least give yourself a great chance of having a great garden this year. Lawn care this time of year, Rob, depends on the type of lawn you have, whether it's a cool season or warm season. A lot of the cool season grasses you're not doing a whole lot to this year, but this time of year. But mowing it is pretty much what you need to do. Your warm season grasses, you can start doing some fertilizing, and they're beginning to come out of dormancy and turn to green, so you can do some fertilizing on them. If you're going to sow seeds, and that would be mainly Bermuda in this area, end of May, 1st of June is a good time to sow warm season grass seeds. And it's also a good time to get warm season turfs, established. So, if you have any questions on lawn care and warm season versus cool season turfs, please contact me, and we can talk about that moving forward. But just some of the programs we've got coming up, and it's a great time to plant trees and shrubs. A lot of them are blooming now, but just be aware that if you plant your trees and shrubs in this time of year, you may have to keep some water on them through the summer. So don't plant them too far away from a water source if you're going to plant your spring trees and shrubs and woody ornamentals, if you will, this time of year.
Good advice.
They're going to need the water. Yeah.
Good advice. Well, Johnny, we are out of time. Special thanks to T.G. Brooks Company, E.B. Harris Auctioneering, Denton Farm Parks, Malpas Brothers Music Festival, and South Boston Memorials. Johnny, thank you for the hard work that you do, and all the other agents. Y'all have a good evening.
Rated number 1 for Person County listeners, WKRX, my hometown station.